Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. Today's conversation explores self-understanding, healing, spirituality, and the journey of making sense of who we are. Many people spend years trying to change themselves or become someone different, yet often the greatest transformation comes not from becoming someone new, but from understanding who we have always been beneath our experiences, fears, wounds, and expectations. We all carry stories about ourselves, stories shaped by childhood, relationships, successes, disappointments, and life experiences. But what happens when those stories no longer serve us? How do we begin making sense of the pieces of ourselves that feel disconnected, misunderstood, or even lost? Today's guest believes that every part of our story has value and meaning. Lynn Min is a psychotherapist, life coach, speaker, pastor, and founder of the Soul Matters LLC. Through her work, she helps individuals reconnect with themselves by integrating psychology, spirituality, emotional healing, and personal growth. Her philosophy is simple yet extremely powerful. You make sense. Lynn, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
It is so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Lynn, let's start with your journey. What first led you into psychotherapy and helping people heal?
That's such a good question because it makes me think back. I'm like, yeah, how did that happen? Right? But I think like anything meaningful that comes upon our in our lives, more than me choosing it, I think healing and psychotherapy found me. Right. I immigrated from Korea when I was 6 years old. And like many children of immigrants, I learned early like how to adapt, perform, and become what other people needed me to be. And so I was this hyper responsible, parentified child to caring for much younger siblings. I knew how to read the rooms emotionally. And I kind of grew into this like adultified role, even with the adults around me. Knowing how to make sense and kind of manage. It was like I was groomed into this role. And I remember when my mentor at my church, when I was young, really young, like 16, 17, she said, I think you need counseling. And I remember feeling at first like, oh my gosh, she thinks I'm crazy. Like I have a problem that I need to like hire a professional. Like I can't just get rid of this problem by praying alone or something like that. But I obeyed and I went into that counseling room and I fell in love with the freedom, the healing that came with just allowing myself to be myself, to have my feelings. And then for another person to lovingly, not judgingly, but just create that space and help me make sense out of myself, it just awakened me to a new way of ministering, a new way of understanding what God might be trying to do in my life. Like everything reorganized around that. And so I remember going back into school, taking a couple more classes so I could do what she did for me. And that's how I became a psychotherapist.
And that's beautiful. That's really interesting because I think so many people, particularly those who take on caring roles from a young age, become experts at looking after everyone else whilst losing touch with their own needs sometimes. But
Absolutely.
what stands out to me is how transformative it can be when someone is finally given permission to simply be themselves without judgment. And as a psychotherapist, I've seen how healing often begins not when people find all the answers, but when they feel truly seen, heard, and accepted. And that message that you share, your message is so powerful. You make sense, and what you said makes sense. But what inspired those three powerful words?
Such a good question. So I would always say, tell me your story. And I would always feel that if people got a chance to see for maybe even the first time, their side of how things played out, because we're so busy trying to see it from other people's perspective. It's almost like that becomes, like you said, so groomed in us early on as like a survival coping mechanism. Like, so empathy, compassion, taking this up, the other person's, like, understanding this story in another person's shoes, or, you know, we were taught that too, right? Like, do to others as you want to do to yourself. But like, we almost do it so well that the priority becomes, let me put myself last, and then let me put this person in front of me first so that I can belong to the systems in my early childhood, which is family and whatever, church, community, society. And we don't mean to, but we grow up not knowing our own stories. Like, it actually takes a little bit of time to then intention ourselves to be like, what am I really feeling? What am I actually running from? And how does this actually make sense? And then when we come to our stories, we're so filled with shame. And I think when we get to tell our stories and have another person mirror back to us, like early childhood development things, like mirroring back to us, oh my gosh, that must have been so difficult. Or not even in words, but just holding that space of non-judgment, what we start to do is start to awaken ourselves and our feeling and capacities to, wow, now I can actually have genuine compassion for the journey that I have lived. And it kind of transmutes and alchemizes the shame and like the anxiety and like the self-hate to a lot of self-compassion. And so I realized that understanding your own story and actually connecting with it and the feeling patterns provided space for a compassion of the self that then like really just helps you alchemize, oh, okay, if I understand myself, then I don't have to feel ashamed. If I know about this, why I do this, or why I feel the way I feel, or why I do all these things in the subconscious, right? Where 96% of the behaviors come from. If I know the reasons behind my actions and the way I am, then I can actually do something about it. I actually start to have a sense of control or empowerment. I'm not just victim to, I don't know why I am just the way I am. You know, I wasn't just born this way. Like, this makes sense. And those were the founding blocks of like just little tiny steps that allows a person to come out of like the shame of like, I don't know why I am the way I am. I hate this about myself. Or even just about feelings that they have. They're ashamed of feeling certain things, you know, to I know why I am the way I am. And I know what I could do about it because now it's in my awareness. And those were like powerful words that pointed to an inflection point from victim to like doing something about it and intentional co-creational living of this is the life I want to create. This is the person I want to become. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's why, you make sense. Just bring so much hope, right? To all the minds going, I don't know why this is, you know, why do I know the right thing to do and don't do it? And this is like an age old thing, even in religions, there's a Bible verse, right? That points to like, I do the things I don't want to do. I don't do the things I want to do. It's human nature. And so, that's the journey.
And that so beautifully explained. So thank you for sharing that. Because when we begin to make sense of our experiences, as you said, we often move from that self-judgment to that self-compassion. And that can be incredibly empowering. And I think understanding why we think, feel, and behave the way that we do gives us the awareness needed to create meaningful change rather than simply repeating those old patterns, as you said.
But
we become more self-aware, we become more self-accepting, and then that compassion within grows. So thank you for sharing that. So when someone says, I don't know who I am anymore, what do you think is really happening beneath the surface?
I love when a person says, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I want. because what's really happening underneath is not that they lost themselves or they don't know. I think what's really happening is they're finally noticing that the roles or the mask or the achievements, the behavior, the relationship, the title, whatever that once defined them, they're realizing that that's not who I am anymore. That might not be like the fullness of who I am. So it's like that moment of inflection of like, oh, it's the loss of what I thought I used to be or had to be. So I don't know, but it's that moment where you're like, oh, but I get to know. Like, I didn't realize I didn't have to be a good girl the way I thought I was supposed to be a good girl. Like, obey mommy and daddy. You know what I mean? Like, get good grades, you know, sex is bad or whatever we were conditioned with. And in that moment where we finally kind of get honest with ourselves and have the courage, it's actually a really courageous moment to come to say, I don't know myself anymore. I think it just really means I don't know myself the way I used to know myself. And it brings a whole infinite amount of possibilities to say, okay, you get to now figure that out and really intentionally co-create this.
And I completely agree with you, because I often see this myself within people where, and it's such an important perspective, because many people view uncertainty as a weakness, sadly, and when actually it can give, or it can be a sign of that growth, that personal growth. And of course, we're learning every day. And in my opinion, my experience, the moment someone starts questioning those old beliefs and expectations and identities is often the moment they begin living more authentically, I think.
And absolutely. I love that you said that word. Yeah.
Thank you. And whilst it can still feel unsettling, because we are learning about ourselves every day and others and the environment and everything around us, it's also, I think, it creates that opportunity to consciously choose who we want to become rather than simply continuing to live in those old conditioning ways. And we sometimes do feel trapped, but how much of our adult lives are shaped by the stories we tell ourselves? Because we do tend to reflect back and we hold on to whatever we can of our old selves. But how much of our adult lives are shaped by the stories we tell ourselves?
You know, honestly, I think more than people realize, first of all, there's no measurement. Like, how do I measure that? 80%, you know? But what we do know is that we humans are meaning-making, story-making creatures, and the brain is constantly organizing experiences into narratives. And so the challenge is that many of those stories were created by a very younger version of ourselves that didn't have the power, the authority, or the knowledge that we do today, right? So a child gets rejected and she concludes, I'm not lovable. Or a teenager gets criticized and they come to the conclusion of, I have to be perfect. And these get woven into a meaning system within a story. And so every human holds the information of who they are within a story. Like when I'm in my most overwhelmed place and I'm struggling a lot, I realize that the story that's playing out is like, everything depends on me. Right? So the story becomes this like invisible glue, and it becomes like the identity that we always live according to and by, and like almost our upper ceilings and everything kind of, there was a saying, they said, you know, the universe is always bringing us new possibilities, an infinite amount of possibilities, but we would only receive and integrate and be able to kind of identify with that which we really believe for ourselves in the subconscious, right? So meaning like anything can be true all the time. Like the moment we, you know, go to on a vacation and decide, do you ever realize when you're going on vacation, you pack all the clothes that you normally wouldn't wear? Like you're like literally trying out a different identity. Like, And there's been like some stories and studies actually that you know, where people try on these different expectations and who they are for a day, and they get different results, right? And it's so true that these stories, it just becomes like the founding blocks of our identity, and therefore it becomes so invisibly strong. And healing often means that we have to update these old narratives with the present day truth. And also it means that we get to choose. We get to choose. There's nobody out there saying you have to be this version of the good girl or a law-abiding citizen. We get to choose what that good girl means. We get to choose, like, do I stop by every red, you know, lights? And, you know, are there moments when I might speed a little bit and, you know, not stop at the orange? Yeah. But, you know, and what does that mean about me? Like, every single moment, there is like a choice point of who we get to say and declare and live out as our identity of who I am in the narrative of what we choose. And I just wanted to mention something when you said uncertainty. I think this is why it's so interesting. Like, we're, of course, going to feel very, very safe with the things that are familiar. And this is why growth can seem very contra safe, contraindicatory. Like growth means that I have to try something new, right? I have to try or believe something new, because if it feels familiar, it's going to give me familiar results. So if you're in a space where you're like, I don't like my anxiety, I don't like the results, and the results never lie, then you have to go back and say, what new thing can I try on? Whether it's a belief or, you know, a methodology or whatever it is, but the most inmost founding blocks being, what new belief and an identity can I try on today? And it's gonna be uncomfortable, because the primitive mind is gonna say, well, that's, you know, and there's always gonna be something that pulls you to the status quo of like, we did it this way. This is the life that we've created because we had these kind of beliefs for this kind of identity. And it's always gonna pull you back. And it's just a brain doing its job. And that's where I would say, change your relationship with uncertainty. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're wrong. It just means that you're trying something new because you don't like the results, you know? And it's like that saying, if you don't change, then you're not going to change. It's kind of crazy to do the same thing, expect different results. And so that's where the awareness point comes in and says, what if I didn't believe this, but I actually believe that this was possible? Or even something as, what if, and that's where like the you make sense of, what if I actually understood why this is true? And then that helped me recalibrate a self-identity and a belief to not, oh, I'm ashamed because I'm just this kind of person, but that makes sense. And then these new possibilities open up. Now you're writing a new narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so powerful.
It's very empowering. And going back to what you were saying, the empowering part is recognizing that whilst we can't always change what happened to us, we can change the meaning we attach to those experiences. And in doing so,
create
a very different future. Thank you so far, Lynn, for sharing such valuable insights. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the amazing Lynn Min. Welcome back, Lynn.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, Lynn, many people spend years fighting parts of themselves. Why do you think that acceptance of self can feel so difficult?
I think it goes all back to what we have learned as norms, and not because of, you know, ill intentions, but our caretakers, our primary caretakers. Most of us have been taught that love was conditional. We've learned that certain emotions were acceptable, certain were not. Certain parts of us were welcomed, while others, we don't even talk about them, right? So we internalize all of these beliefs as what is normal, and if we can eliminate what our flaws are, whatever the flaws mean, meaning like what our caretakers didn't like or didn't accept, then we would finally be in this state of like love. And the irony is that the parts that we exile, they're the ones that often hold our like most authentic, amazing gifts. So it's interesting that healing is not becoming somebody else, but it's learning how to welcome home and integrate the parts of us that we've abandoned.
That's beautiful. And I'm so glad that you've shared that, because that's the part that I think a lot of people do struggle with, that whole integration element. And I mean, what really resonates with that, I often see people spending years trying to reject or hide parts of themselves that were never the problem in the first place. And from my own experience as a psychotherapist, I feel healing isn't about becoming a new person. It's about developing a healthier relationship with all parts of yourself, including the parts you've judged, you've criticized, or pushed away. And when we learn to accept the good, the bad, the ugly aspects of self and ourselves more fully, we often discover strengths and that resilience and qualities that have been there all along. So I love that you've spoken about that. Now, this is the most exciting part of this conversation, I feel. You combine psychology and spirituality in your work, which is what I'm so fascinated with and have been trying to put out there myself, because there is a link. A lot of people can't see that link, and I would love for you to explain how do those two worlds work together.
I love that. You know, it's interesting because before I was a psychologist, I was a pastor, and I was brought up in a very religious home. And so, I mean, that came with its own baggage. But one foundational gift that it brought me was that I was always attuned to the invisible world. I was always told, and it was always true to me, that in order for there to be a physical, there had to be something invisible. Yeah. And now, you know, even in the DNA, what scientists have called junk DNA, or like just junk space, that's where the magic is. You know, if we just boil down matter of the whole world, it's like almost less than like 1% of all the atoms. Like really what we're made of is the relationship of all of the cells and the atoms and neutrons and the protons that are in the cells, that are in our bodies. Like, isn't that crazy? Like that most of us is empty space, just relating. So we're literally made out of the invisible energy of how the physical matters are relating to one another. And so from the very beginning, for me, psychology and spirituality was never separate. Actually, the root word of psychology, the psuche, it points to like, you know, when the ancients wrote about the psuche, it was like the seat of the heart, the soul. it wasn't just the mind, and like how Western understanding of psychology is more like mind and like the brain, and but it was really like the soul. And so for me, had this richness of when I talk about like, why am I the way I am? I can't separate out just mindset from a soul set, which is why, like, you know, my company Soul Matters, it's like, tell me what the matters of your soul is, because those are the things that literally materialize into your mind, your behaviors, your body, right? And now more than ever, science is catching up with all of these things of like, you know, if you're not really seeing how all these are one, it's not as direct as like, okay, I got the flu because I was thinking a wrong thought. But Isn't it not true that like when we are coherent, like our thoughts and our heart and our feelings, they all work together, and it creates wellness or disorder in even in our bodies. Dr. Gabor Mate does a good work on this, right?
Yeah.
And so psychology, I think, helps us understand the mechanisms of like our mind and our kind of like when the lamp, there's a lamp, there's like wires and there's like structures of that. But the actual thing that flows and makes the lamp light up, that's energy. That's the invisible. And so the marriage of all of these things, and I'm sure this metaphor somehow fails, but also like you get the point that like we can't pull it apart. And in our beings, I truly do believe that beyond the ways that we are categorizing, we are absolutely mind, body, and soul operating as one. And so the spirituality piece, it helps us understand the meaning. And so when we talk about even narratives, right? What do you believe? And we, now we understand how powerful beliefs are to the mind, to the behaviors in the subconscious, right? But beliefs, when we talk about beliefs, you know, now we're crossing realms with kind of like religion and, you know, do you believe that this world is a safe place, a beautiful place, a good place? Do you believe that there's something, you know, bigger than you that is orchestrating that, that goodness will have the last say? All of these beliefs have its role, and it plays a huge part in the wellness of our minds, and therefore the feelings that we have, and therefore the chemicals that our body emits. And so I feel like you can't treat just one. It just would not work, or it'll just be symptom management until you get to look at how all of these factors about us are playing into each other and in our becoming and in our being.
It's such a fascinating topic as well, because I feel while psychology helps us understand the mechanisms behind our experiences, I think many people also recognize that there is a deeper dimension to being human that can't always be measured, yet still profoundly influences our well-being. And I completely agree with everything you've shared there, that beliefs are incredibly powerful because they influence how we interpret our experiences, the choices we make, and ultimately how we feel about ourselves and the world around us. So thank you for sharing that. So why do so many people feel disconnected from themselves despite being successful on the outside?
I think the short of that is because success and true coherence and alignment are not the same thing. And many of us grow up measuring what success is from what we are told, get good grades. Like even for women, right? Like when we talk about a beautiful woman, we kind of know that she's probably on the thinner side or whatever, whatever. Like we're taught these things. They're not necessarily harnessed and gathered and explored within the inside. And so no wonder, right? When we follow these external measures and then one day we're like, this, I don't even know if I want this. I'm not happy. Because happiness is an inner job. It's a coherence of the head, the soul, the mind, the body, right? And so many of us live with inconsistent, incoherent energies, like contra energies. Like our mind would say, like even in the simple thing of like, I don't know why I keep getting attracted to the wrong men, you know? So much to pull apart there, right? Like there's a part of you that is attracted. And then there's a part of you that has determined that it is wrong. Wow. Those two energies within the same being, that must be very chaotic to live with.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think internally it's exhausting to be in incoherence. And I think success answers external questions like, what have I accomplished? Did I get this? And do other people see this? But alignment and coherence kind of asks a deeper question to like, am I living as my authentic self? Is my heart, my head, and my hands all running on the same energy towards the same direction? And then the work of healing can sometimes be thought of as, and if they're not, what is getting in the way? So we call them subconscious blocks. What is the narrative that we're holding that like keeps us from aligning? What are the fears? And then to really deal with, to sit with these questions and to not just explore the answers, but to walk that out in your life, I would say is the healing journey, the becoming journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that's beautifully put. And I really appreciate you sharing your insights into, and such valuable insights as well, because I think it's really important for people to understand that when those beliefs become healthier and more balanced, we often see positive changes emotionally and mentally and physically. So thank you so much, Lynn. We are going to take another short commercial break. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today we're talking about healing, self-understanding, and making sense of who we are with the wonderful Lynn Min. Welcome back, Lynn.
Thank you so much. I'm so enjoying this conversation.
It's my pleasure to have you back here. Now, Lynn, before the break, you were talking about different parts of ourselves. What does that actually mean in practice?
To integrate these different parts of ourselves, I, man, it's like to take that concept from the head and to actually become it, it means that you learn to hold the complexity of all of your parts, the strong part and the vulnerable part, the ambitious part and the part that needs rest, the spiritual part that knows all is done, all is perfect, and the human part that is still working towards this like highest version of you. It also means loving, like literally loving and being very aware of the relationship you have with your parts, meaning the wounded child that didn't get the perfect parent that it always wanted or she deserved. And then the wise adult that doesn't need a mommy anymore, right? And integration is just recognizing that we don't have to choose. Actually, we can't choose. We are all. We are every single part, and that each and every part carries a gift and a function and a purpose. Yeah.
And that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. You see, I like the perspective because I think many people spend years fighting parts of themselves instead of trying to understand them. But in as a psychotherapist, my experience has taught me that emotional well-being isn't about eliminating that vulnerability or fear or uncertainty. It's about learning how those parts can coexist alongside our strengths, the resilience we learn, and also the wisdom we have from our past experiences as well, what we're learning from those past experiences. And when we stop seeing parts of ourselves as a problem to be fixed and start viewing them as experiences to be understood, we often develop a much healthier relationship with ourselves. But sometimes people get caught up in those past experiences and patterns. So what patterns do you most commonly see keeping people stuck?
I think for most of the population that I work with, which is mostly women, self-abandonment part, the people-pleasing part, the perfectionism, and this one's big, and it's actually still thought of as like a strength, but the over-responsibility, right? We try to do more than what we are actually supposed to. And we try to control and manage. And we don't, actually control might be a strong word, but I think a lot of women manage. And they are expected to do so as a mother, as a wife, or as a home, you know, the person that's managing the home. But I think it really creates a lot of stress in that actually there comes a point where we allow people to think what they think, feel what they feel, and that has to be okay. And so those are the common, I think there's a collective of a standard that is changing, of a cleaner way of really understanding what is mine to hold, what is mine to process, what is mine to change, and then what is mine to accept.
Yeah.
Not to alter, not to impact, or just what is mine to accept. And so I think that is a huge one. Especially for women and mothers that I see a lifetime of caring for everyone else while leaving them last, right? Mm-hmm. I think eventually, and I think we're all there where the nervous system says, I can't do this anymore. Yeah.
And I think that's something many women will relate to because qualities such as being caring, responsible, and dependable are often praised, yet when taken to the extreme, they can come at the expense of our own well-being. And I love that you've shared that. So what changes do you see when someone actually stops judging themselves and begins understanding themselves?
I think just in the way of their being, everything softens. They become a lot less reactive.
Yes.
They become more compassionate, more honest, and therefore more courageous. Their contra energy is made more aware, so they stop wasting energy just fighting themselves. That energy, I think it's just so interesting how it becomes available for faster decisions, you know, less overthinking, more confidence, creating, loving, leading, like intentionally creating the emotional state of this moment and this moment and this moment, and then leading and knowing that these are going to be very different behaviors and decisions and actions that I'm taking than from a very reactive, unconscious space. And so, yeah, it's just a night and day. And it's interesting that all of these things can happen and the outside world might not be any different. But the internal shift, that little shift, makes everything different.
I completely agree. Because one of the biggest changes I see in people is not that their circumstances suddenly improve, but that their relationship with themselves improves. And finally, Lynn, if there is one message you would like listeners to take away about healing, self-love, and living a meaningful life, what would that be?
I would love all the listeners to know that nothing about your story is wasted. Nothing about, no parts of you are there for no reason. Not the grief, not the mistakes, not the past heartbreaks, or like all of the years that you spent surviving. Every experience has shaped you exactly the way you needed it to be, has taught you and prepared you in ways that you might not yet understand. And so therefore, I would love for you to not identify yourself as like this problem to solve, right? But maybe a mystery to be understood. And the more deeply that you understand yourself, the more compassion and love, like genuine love, you develop for the most ugliest, unlovable parts of yourself. And the more you realize that you're the one to do that, not export that or, you know, bring that from the outside, the more freedom you gain to become who you have been actually beyond the survival stuff. And that's the promise of, and that's the hope of, you make sense. You're exactly where you need to be. And you're in the exact right timeline. You just need to be on that journey of getting curious as to like, how does this all make sense? And it's going to open up to your most beautiful, authentic version of you.
And what a beautiful note to end the show with. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today. What I love about this conversation is that it reminds us that healing isn't about becoming somebody else. It's about understanding ourselves more deeply, making peace with our story, and recognizing that every part of who we are has shaped the person sitting here today.
Yes.
So often we judge ourselves for our struggles, our mistakes, or the chapters we'd rather forget. Yet, as Lynn has shared, perhaps the journey isn't about fighting ourselves, but about understanding ourselves. So if today's conversation has resonated with you, I encourage you to take a moment to reflect on the stories you tell yourself, the beliefs you hold about who you are, and whether those beliefs are helping you move forward or keeping you stuck in the past. A huge thank you to Lynn Min for sharing her wisdom, insight, and compassion with us today. Lynn, if our listeners want to connect with you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram, send me a message. It's Lynn_Min_Anding on Instagram.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and I'm going to share a snippet of a song which I think is so apt for today's show, Count On Me by Bruno Mars. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the dark and you can't see, I'll be the light to guide you. Find
find out what we're made of. When we are called to help our friends in need, you can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can count on you like 4, 3, 2, and you'll be there. That's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah.